Hillary Clinton is a fierce neoliberal who believes in backing up the so-called hidden hand of the free market with merciless, iron-fisted military policies.
Let me ask you very quickly about Blackwater and the trial that's been going on. Jurors have been deliberating in the murder and manslaughter trial of the four former Blackwater operatives allegedly involved in the 2007 massacre at Baghdad's Nisour Square. The suspects are charged with the deaths of 14 of the 17 Iraqi civilians who died when their Blackwater unit indiscriminately opened fire.
Right. I mean, this was the worst massacre of Iraqi civilians at the hands of mercenaries, private contractors that we know of in Iraq. And you know, I don't know how the verdict is going to turn out, but what I do know is that the person who should be on trial is Eric Prince, who was the founder and ran Blackwater when it was essentially Murder Incorporated in Iraq, where there was an environment at that company where they were encouraged to view every Iraqi as the enemy, and they committed many massacres beyond what we know at Nisour Square. This is a microcosm of what happens all the time. It's always the people down the chain that face the consequences. I believe that these men should be prosecuted, should be convicted for what they did, and they should be in prison. But the leadership of Blackwater should also be there. And until we as a society stop cutting off who's held accountable at the lowest ranks, nothing is ever going to fundamentally change.
Jeremy Scahill, thanks so much for being with us. His new book, Dirty Wars, The World is a Battlefield, well, the New York Times bestseller, is now out in paperback. And that does it for the show. Congratulations to our colleagues. A heartfelt congratulations to our former producers, Maddie Harper and John Hamilton, on the birth of their daughter, Jasmine Cynthia Harper. Happy birthday, Becca Staley. I'm Amy Goodman.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford College. Now it's time for our public affairs show on National College Radio Day. Yay! Okay, and the show is called The New WHFR Journal.
Join WHFR as we celebrate College Radio Day, Friday, October 3rd, 2014. College Radio Day is an annual event encouraging people who may not normally listen to college radio to do so on this day. This annual celebration aims to raise awareness about the many college radio stations across the U.S. And WHFR is proud to be one of those radio stations. We bring local, alternative music to the airwaves at WHFR 89.3 FM on your radio dial and at WHFR.FM on the web. We've been doing it for nearly 30 years, broadcasting live from the campus of Henry Ford College at 5101 Evergreen Road. We hope you join us in celebrating College Radio Day, Friday, October 3rd, 2014. WHFR.FM, making waves.
So we are here with the new WHFR Journal on National College Radio Day. Well, it's every day is College Radio Day for us because that's what we are. That's what we do. Okay. And we've got a very exciting show for National College Radio Day. We are expecting our special guest, Paul Homeniak, who is the Green Party candidate for governor of Michigan. You saw him?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, he's on his way, folks. I know that because I have his schedule. And today he was in Port Huron this morning at a Meet the Candidates forum. It started at 10 a.m. So my suspicion is that candidates forum probably lasted until 12 or so. And how far a drive is it from here to Port Huron, John, or Port Huron to here?
It's probably a good hour.
Yeah, a good hour. Yep. So, okay, we have time. Again, the Libertarian candidate for governor. Mary Buzema was on the show a couple of weeks ago, and we finally worked out about 35 minutes for her, and we promised Paul about equal time. So he still has a few more minutes to get here. We'll get him on as soon as he arrives. There's always a lot of news and information about Dearborn and the surrounding area we try to cover on this show. And certainly, we're going to start with it right now, by golly. So what about the candidates forum for members, for candidates running for the school board? John, you were at the meeting with me this last Tuesday that was hosted by the League of Women Voters in Dearborn Public Schools. 11 candidates for 3 slots. None of them are incumbents right now.
Yes, and there seemed to be a wide range of strengths and or weaknesses as far as people, candidates were concerned. Some had more experience in the area of education than others, but they all appeared to be extremely interested in running for office.
Well, I think all but one of the 11 showed up. I know they had one empty seat there. And I wanted to mention specifically, and what we hope to do here on this show, folks, and we will promote it on the website and let you know as soon as we get the audio portion of that forum, which only lasted for their segment about an hour. Mm-hmm. So we were going to use an upcoming hour before the election as soon as we get the audio file put together from the Dearborn Public Schools. They're doing the editing, and as soon as we get that, we will put that on the air here. Could be next week Friday. Who knows? They don't have one of the guest candidates scheduled for next Friday, although the week after that, Debbie Dingell is coming in. So we're not going to bump her out, of course. And by the way, I do want to say that Tony Guerrero, who is a candidate for 19th District Court Judge here in Dearborn, challenger, not the incumbent, we've invited him now twice, 2 formal invitations in the last couple weeks, and he hasn't responded. Of course, that's his choice. If he doesn't want the WHFR bump, that's up to him, you know, take your chances. He has a lot of ads in the 2 local papers. If you subscribe to the Pressing Guide or the Times Herald, you can see his ads, and now also his competition, Judge Summers, his ads, a lot of detailed information, of course, mud throwing and so on both sides. But we'd like to have Tony in just to talk about his experience, his background. You know, we don't allow any candidates to do mudslinging specifically on this show. There's plenty of time for that, I think, after you win an election or something. But I just want to find out what's good about them and why you should vote for them.
Well, and I just heard from a very hot source nearby that he is still interested in speaking with us, and we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Okay. Tony, you got my number. Or talk to your barber, because he's my barber too, Tony. So I gave my card to my barber, and he's just his place is just, you know, 1 block down from your office in Allen Park. So just walk on down there and talk to your barber. He's got my info. If your campaign office lost it or something like that. Yeah, don't be afraid of us. We won't be too nasty. we might hold a grudge if you don't come on the show, but that's fine. You've expressed yourself in your ads, I know. Although I feel a little bit left out. I've gotten no mailing from Guerrero on the east side of Dearborn. Is there some reason? I mean, you're always trying to save money or use money where it's best going to cause the best effect in a political campaign. You can't always do every mailing, every communication for everybody, but you know you've got to make some choices there because there's only so much money. And I don't know, I've got nothing at my house, whereas Judge Summer has actually knocked on all the doors in my neighborhood, my small neighborhood association, every single street, every house. He was there asking and then leaving stuff and so on. So it's a pretty tough race on both sides. And we'd love to have Tony Guerrero, the challenger, here on the show. Give him 15, 20 minutes, as we're doing all candidates other than if they're running for governor, you know, and see what he has to say. So, okay, getting back to the forum for the candidates for the Dearborn Schools Board of Trustees, Board of Education. Also, you know, when they're elected, they also become a trustee of Henry Ford College. They have to have double meetings every month. We're the only so-called P14 district in Michigan, mm-hmm, where the same people are actually the body that is responsible for running, again, the P-12 and a community college. So it is a very important job, and as a part-time job, as a very low-paying job, even less money than city council, it's definitely something that we have to be concerned about. And I want to tell you about the voter's guide prepared by the League of Women Voters, because in regard to these candidates for Dearborn Board of Ed, it's very good. It's a summary. It's all the names, backgrounds, occupation, campaign website if they have one, a couple of general statements about issues that they think are important. And that voter guide is now printed and available at the City Hall in Dearborn and other city halls near in the area. Of course, the one in Dearborn is the one for voters of Dearborn to vote on this particular issue. Remember, you can go to the website vote411.org and just tell them where you live. That's actually a national League of Women Voters website. But if you tell them where you live, what state, what's your zip code, they will show you exactly what's on the ballot, and you can even print it out from your computer if you don't want to get it this published guide, this printed guide from the city clerk's office. Remember, the new location of Dearborn City Hall is now west of the Centennial Library. That's right, west of the Centennial Library. So, vote411.org. Comments from yours truly about this situation with all these candidates. Of course, one of the candidates, Mary Petchlikoff, has been on the board before and is not currently on the board. So of the four or five questions that quickly went around all these 10 candidates that attended this meeting, she was the only one that actually knew what the board had been doing. That she's continued to follow the issues. I thought that was important. I was amazed that most of the other candidates apparently have never attended recent meetings. I mean, or they didn't take notes. They didn't seem aware of the current issues and actions of the current school board. How is that possible? If you're running for an office like this, wouldn't you be up to speed on the current issues by attending these meetings? If they couldn't attend the meetings, are they going to attend the future meetings if they get elected? I don't know. It's going to be a real question. Our special guest is coming into the studio now, so we're going to take a listen to Jim Hightower commentary here while we get our guest, Paul Homeniak of the Green Party, in place. And so stay tuned for that interview coming up right after Jim Hightower's comment. He believes there should be higher education for everybody. Yeah, made possible for everybody.
Question: is making higher education available to every American more important to our national interest than letting Wall Street profiteers make a few more billions of dollars each year? Answer: of course. Yet, our political leaders, pushed by Wall Street lobbyists, have been making the opposite choice for years. As a result, banksters have loaded students down with a mountain of high-interest loans, rising from just over $2 billion a decade ago to nearly $1 trillion last year. Worse, the financiers, either banks or government lenders, have become the gatekeepers of advanced education, shutting out thousands of young people wanting to get ahead but not able to hurdle the formidable financial barrier. This is enormously costly to America and completely unnecessary. The smart choice, as we learned from the GI Bill after World War II, would be to make college and professional training free. Universal access to higher education, i.e. free access, produces a very high return on the public's investment while also producing a widely shared prosperity and a broadly educated citizenry. Of course, an upfront investment in a smarter, more productive, more democratic civilization is pricey. So where do we get the money to do what America needs? Get it from where it went. Wall Street's super-rich speculators are now making millions of super-fast robotic financial transactions per second, generating trillions of dollars a year for them. but producing nothing of real value for us while distorting and endangering markets. This is Jim Hightower saying, put a tiny tax on each of those automated gambles by speculators, and more than enough money will come into the public coffers to free up higher ed for all. For information, check out United States Students Association at www.usstudents.org.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
This is the new WHFR Journal. Jay Koronek, John Conroy with you, and now our special guest just joining us, the Green Party candidate for governor of Michigan on the November 4th ballot. Very honored to have you here today, Paul Homeniak.
Well, thank you, Jay and John. It's a pleasure to be here. It's nice to get some exposure for third parties.
Well, that's one of the principles of what we do as a college radio station. And by the way, today is National College Radio Day.
Woo! Woo, woo. All right.
But, you know, we are a non-commercial station, and like many non-commercial stations, we don't have to play any favorites. Like, we don't have to play favorites with people that are taking out commercials on our station. You know, we can just be as honest as possible, as factual as possible, within our limited resources. And that's really a great thing. When I talked to the Libertarian candidate for governor a couple weeks ago, Mary Buzema, there was not even any radio or TV station in Michigan even asked her for an interview at that point. We were the first ones. And I'm thinking, my gosh, isn't there sort of responsibility? Shouldn't there be of all broadcasters in Michigan, whether you've taken out ads on their stations or not, to let people that are legally on the ballot and that people could vote for get the information for the public out? I thought that it sounds like a citizenship sort of duty of broadcasters. So anyway, here we are.
Well, and I thank you for that. I was actually sitting next to Mary this morning up in Port Huron at a forum.
Mm-hmm.
And
great.
We have had a few TV and radio interviews, not many.
You have.
I have.
Yes.
And we're trying to build on that. We also, the big question about debates and with Mr. Snyder and Mr. Schauer finally agreeing to a forum sort of type setup with just the two of them. But, people want debates on the issues and they want everybody involved. We actually, there's five candidates on the ballot for governor. Three of us have signed a statement saying we will debate anywhere, anytime, under any rules.
Right.
And
great.
We've offered Mr. Schauer and Mr. Snyder a chance to sign that. So far, we haven't heard anything from them.
Well, if the Democrats and Republicans are so great, then why are they afraid of the other party's positions? I mean, if they're encompassing everything for everybody, or each party thinks they are, then why in the world would you not allow these other people in? Because you must have the winning argument. Oh, they're just afraid. People who have power, they're so paranoid about losing even a little bit of power, but allowing any other ideas into the discussion. And that's, I thought that's a mark of our democracy, to allow as many opinions as possible, and even from minority groups, if you want to call a third party a minority group, so that there's that socialization process. I thought that's the whole idea of a good democracy.
Well, I think that's true. And I don't remember if it was Mr. Snyder or Mr. Schauer when the debate discussion first came up said, there's nothing in it for me. And I believe a leader says, what's in it for the people? And then the answer to that is everything. An informed electorate is what the foundation of a free society. And if you don't inform the electorate, and the minority thing, I've always get a kick out of that because the Secretary of State tells us there's about 7.5 million registered voters in Michigan. Between the Republicans and Democrats together, they can't account for even 3 million. And therefore, that's 4.5 million people that say they're either independent or third party.
Mm-hmm.
So why are we letting these minority parties, the Democrats and the Republicans, run things for so long?
Right. And people should remember, as I've said on the show many times, is that even the political primary process is closed to third parties. Why? Because the primaries were a legislative creation from the Democrats and Republicans. And of course, they wouldn't want anybody that might challenge them, and they must be really afraid, that's all I can say, to not allow every legal candidate for office to be part of that. Although personally, I'm against all the primaries in concept, because they're just, in this case, they're just ads for Democrats and Republican candidates. But can't the political parties figure out who their best candidates are and then let the public, you know, hear about them? I don't. This whole idea of letting the public decide who the best candidate is, how can they really know these candidates as well as the party that they work with all the time? Well, anyway, let's start at the beginning here.
Okay.
And John's going to have the first question to you.
Okay.
Paul Homeniak, who's Green Party candidate for governor.
Well, welcome again, Paul. It's good to have you here.
Thank you.
You're an educator as well as a small businessman. And how would you characterize your style of management or working and in turn working with a state as big as Michigan to run the business of Michigan?
Well, I think as a manager, I'm very much a hands-on manager from the standpoint of I don't want to do all the work, but I certainly want to know what's going on and make sure that's happening. The work is happening. I'm also very big on let's find solutions, and to do that you have to really define the problems correctly. And too often we say, well, we're going to go after waste in government, and the only thing they do is do across-the-board cuts in some department or another and say, but they never look at what's happening with that. And you need to actually go in and see what's being done, what's supposed to be being done, and address that. And politicians for years, I think back since Barry Goldwater first said something about a millionaire, pretty soon you're talking real money, they tend to want to say, well, it's just such a small amount, but it's an attitude that carries through everything people do. So right now in this election, as a statewide candidate, each county clerk has to send me a proof ballot to make sure the names and positions are right on it, and they send it to all the candidates. So most of them sent by 47-cent stamp, first-class mail. A few of them got and saved some money by doing an email. Wayne County chose to send theirs all registered mail for $7.19 apiece. And you may say that's a small amount, but it sets up an attitude of people that it doesn't matter.
Right, yep.
And we need to fight that.
That's, well, that makes a lot of sense to me. And as well as you are in the business department, you were teaching in the business department at Washtenaw.
Yes.
And what area in the business area do you teach?
All right. Well, I teach actually in hospitality management. For about 13 years, I had a little bakery cafe and ran that. And I was teaching at Lansing Community College for a few years while I was running the company. Mm-hmm. And then after I sold the company, I got asked to teach more at LCC. And then about 3 years ago now, I think it's been, with the president at LCC came in and said, we want our students to have the jobs of tomorrow, not the low-life jobs like truck driver and auto mechanic. He actually said that. And they eliminated 12 programs from fashion design to auto repair to truck driving to the hospitality program.
Well, we don't quite have automated trucks yet, you know, autonomous without drivers. And they're talking about that for individual transportation, but we're nowhere near that yet. I mean, those are actually good jobs. There is a problem in that industry. Maybe they need more unions, because these drivers often have to drive long, long, boring hours, and they're being pushed a little bit too hard for safety's sake, and they know that. They can't seem to get the respect that they need, and that might be one example. By the way, you mentioned hospitality. We've got a great program here. Sorry, we don't have time to take you to the restaurant. We run a restaurant for the not just the campus, but for the community.
I have a little familiarity with the program here, and it's a good program.
We're doing a big Oktoberfest banquet this coming Wednesday, yes.
We should invite you to October 8th.
Well.
we'll have a real good celebration
if he was in the area. But besides your background, you are doing some teaching at Wayne County, Washtenaw County. I was interested in your resume about your how you have designed some curriculum with the company that you've set up. And one of the things you've created, I don't know what the time frame was, but is that one of the issues you've dealt with was homelessness, and you actually produced a manual for agencies to follow to try to help overcome this problem.
Yes. The company Practical Education Solutions, we do training, both the actual training and also design training for organizations and companies. And we actually got approached, in fact, it's kind of how the company was born, by an organization in the Grand Rapids area called Community Rebuilders. And they're one of the larger housing agencies there, but they take a different approach. They call it a strength-based approach, where rather than saying, okay, if you have problems, whether it's drugs or alcohol or whatever, you got to get those in hand before we put you in housing, they say, we're going to get you in housing, and then we'll deal with the other stuff after that. And what they find it is after a year, while most agencies that still take the needs-based approach have only about 47% of their people still in stable housing, they have over 80% still in stable housing.
Wow.
And they asked me to work with them, and we built this handbook to help people make the transition into stable housing. If you've been homeless for a while or out on the street or living in shelters, it's a transition. And so the handbook was actually designed to take them through basics, everything from how do you talk to the power companies to get your own lights and things turned on, to how to go ahead and do budgets. And we spend a lot of time in the materials on how to communicate what you really want. A lot of people are frustrated, especially if they've been homeless and in dire straits for a time being. And so they'll get angry when things don't go their way. And we take a series of exercises with them that they can role play and practice about what is it that I really want to accomplish. Do I just want to vent my feelings, or do I actually want to make a change?
Well, and my question too is, in the social service agencies that are around in not only this area, but I'm sure in Lansing, have you gone to them with your ideas and your programs to see if they'll help?
Yeah, the Homeward Bound manual is actually being used by Community Rebuilders, but several other agencies, both in Michigan and also some as far away as California, have used it, taken it.
Oh, real good.
Just in terms of homelessness, that's again another topic that I have to blame on the majority of mainstream media. They don't cover it because it's an ongoing issue. There's no individual crisis. There's no single moment of an explosion. It's just there, and a lot of people don't want to think about it because they think all those certain people think, well, they're just lazy. Why don't they get a job? You know, I mean, that's the worst I've heard about people say about the homeless. But it you just don't want to think about it, but it's always going on. There's several other issues like this, and I'd like to get to again, folks, we're talking to Paul Homeniak, who is the Green Party candidate for governor. You could vote for him if you want to on November 4th for governor. But a lot of people want to probably find out from you, and we'll go into some individual issues and what you do as governor if elected. What is the Green Party of Michigan? What do they stand for? I have to say that at the outset, the whole idea of being green, is that a Kermit the Frog thing? And of course, his song was, "It's not easy being green." Maybe you've experienced that, but it's not just about the trees. It's not just about frog issues. It's really an amazing range. I think the party platform I'm looking at here goes on for about 2,000 words, yes. But it has 10 key values. And I don't think most people understand that the Green Party does have a complete program, as does the Libertarian Party, and a platform that tries to encompass the situation we're in today and has ideas about how to respond to each kind of problem, too. So maybe you'd want to summarize some of what the party stands for.
Well, you know, I always like to say that the Green Party were more than you think and not near as crazy as you've been told. Some of my fellow Green Party members get upset about that, you know, but the truth is we've had a perception that either we're just strictly environmental or we're on the fringe of the environment, and we're not. We have a lot of ideals in all the areas of any party. We're big believers in social justice. We're a big believer that nonviolence can usually solve most problems. And we try to build our actions around those things.
And people should know and probably remember that there were several presidential campaigns in the last 15 years where Ralph Nader was the Green Party of the United States candidate for president. Mm-hmm. And some people said he shouldn't have run because he made the Republicans Bush win back instead of Al Gore. But that's a whole nother separate issue. Just not enough people understood, I think, what the Green Party was all about. So the Green Party has a great history here in America. And the Green Party of the United States has got candidates for almost every office nationwide, and certainly recently for president of the United States, and those offices, when the every 4 years, come up. But I thought, and listeners of the show know that because we put our personal opinions in here, and John will do the caveat now, right?
No, go ahead, Jay.
Okay. The opinions expressed in the show are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College, and we do thank them for allowing us to express our opinions. One of my positions is, just as a person, is that of being a pacifist. I do not believe that violence is a good answer for any problem. It's never a solution. It causes more problems, I think. Sometimes it's necessary for, I guess, self-defense if there's no other choice. But and there have been so many examples of inappropriate use of force at the national level, and sometimes in recent history, even at the state and local levels too, where you know other solutions should happen. And the Green Party, you get my, if not my vote, because we can't talk about that on the air, but you know, commendation for making nonviolence a core of all your principles. And again, some people think, well, that just can't work. I mean, a big bully, he's got to hit him in the face. You know, I don't think he's going to learn his lesson from that. You know,
no.
And look at our prison system in Michigan. More people incarcerated. That doesn't necessarily mean we're any safer. But percentage-wise, we're the state that has the highest percent of people in prison.
Yes.
And what's going on there? And that's not a solution either. You know, people come out of prison, and the surveys show they're probably going to commit another crime.
Yeah, and I don't really believe that the citizens of Michigan are that much more prone to crime than any other state, that we have such a high percentage involved. But Michigan, under the Democrats and the Republicans for many years, has led the way in the zero tolerance policies, or the get tough on crime, three strikes type things. And so a lot of people, vast chunk of the people in our prisons are basically in for small-time drug offenses, carry offenses, and so on, where they really should be getting treatment rather than prison, mm-hmm. and taking out of that. You know, on the crime subject itself, tying into that, we know that the better education people have, the more education people have, the less likely they are to commit crime. It's cheaper to send a student to college for a year than it is to keep them in prison for a year, and yet we tend to put more money into let's go ahead and put people in prison. Mm. You know, when we could really turn that toward let's help everybody get the education they need.
And in regard to the prison situation, rehabilitation is primarily an educational effort.
It is.
There too, so... you know, that's a major part of the Green Party platform, always has been nationally, statewide, and so on. The last candidate we had on here, not for governor, but I said I was going to ask him about his position on issues that relate to women, like whether or not they should have choice or be forbidden from abortions or birth control information or even the right to vote in some cases, but never got to that. So I've got to ask you, what's the position of the Green Party and in terms of women's issues?
Well, I think we're in support of people's issues, and women should have all those rights. Equal pay, they mm-hmm. should have the right to choice when it comes to things like abortion and birth control. Personally, you know, what other medical aspect do we ever put our noses into as a state except this one, and why should that? It should be between a woman, her medical provider, and anybody else she chooses to include in it, in that decision. And we're very strong believers in that. We would love to have more women involved. My running mate is a woman. Candace Cavney is a doctor and, you know, very involved in these issues. We really want to move toward not a question of male or female. It's just a question of human rights, no matter what sex you are or what gender identification you have.
Sure. Okay. That's great. I can't imagine other people wanting to limit equal rights for all people, but that's happened in state after state. Just recently, Texas is having a real problem with people seeking birth control help, and it boggles my mind. But let's move on. You want to get to issues, John? You want to pick an issue and
sure.
See the Green Party, Paul's stand on that?
Well, I would say one issue that comes to mind is, since you've been involved with businesses, is when you hire, do you have set standards as far as what as far as education goes before you hire someone?
Well, no, I try to interview them and find out about a very diverse background. You know, to be perfectly honest, one of my smartest hires ever in the bakery, when I had that, was a young man who had barely finished high school and spent some time in prison right after high school, but came out wanting to turn his life around, and he was an amazing employee and has since gone on to take some, get some additional education and continue working in the field to work with.
Well, let me follow up, because I know candidates both nationally and locally are asking to take a stand, either for or against Common Core, national standards basically for education that trickles down to even the local level here. And so how do you feel about that issue?
Well, I'm against Common Core. I want to give the local control back to the local school districts. We sit there and we tell the teachers that every student learns differently. You have to adjust your learning, your teaching styles, to work with the different learning styles. And then we turn around and say, but we're going to test them all the same, and your job depends on how they do on that test. It makes no sense whatsoever. When you have the control back at the local districts, whether it's for the curriculum, for the requirements, even for the teaching standards, you get diversity, you get innovation, and that leads to creative new ways to teach. When you're standing someplace at the top level and saying, well, you must teach it this way, then fine. Everybody's going to get mediocrity at best and really bad teaching at worst. By pushing it down and putting that local control, yes, there are going to be some things tried that aren't going to work very well, but there's going to be a lot of new things tried that are going to work extremely well, and those are going to be copied by other districts faster than what a decree could make them copy them. And you need that creativity.
Well, and as an educator for 40-plus years here, I saw the beginning of testing come into the college level, and my daughter, as I think her 13th or 14th year as a teacher at a middle school in Southfield, and a science teacher there, and it's becoming teaching to the test, and the test usually just judge the quantity, not the quality.
Exactly.
Of their learning. And part of the quality of learning, which nobody's figured out how to test, is exactly what you've been talking about, I believe, and that is how do we engender the motivation, the enthusiasm for learning, and the skills that that can then be applied to learning more. In other words, people should be made able, not just learn things by rote, because a computer can do that. You can, you know, fill a memory chip up with all kinds of information. But how do you, what kind of wisdom or creativity do you use to get that information to help a problem or a situation in real life? And they still don't have any way to test that kind of, call it emotional intelligence or whatever you want to call it, to look at how the system is improving the joy of education in the minds of the students. Maybe we'll get there sometime. But this testing right now, and I know there's been some examples shown about some really stupid story problems that Common Core, apparently, the first wave of Common Core tests, or at least proposed tests, don't make any sense, and even teachers can't properly answer the questions at this point. So that's, it's bound to happen whenever you begin a new testing program. Although some people are saying, who wrote that test? Did a teacher write that? Well, maybe, but it's going to take a long time before the tests are really valuable. Now, here at the college, though, at the college level, we have North Central Accreditation Group that's renamed themselves recently, and all colleges, our degrees are worth nothing without that national and regional group saying that we're worth something. And we've always gotten like 10-year acceptance for our credentials from them, which is the longest possible approval. But now, because of the federal government too, it's really a constant process. And we've been doing it, you know, renewal, curriculum work, trying to come up with standards, trying to see what works. It's an ongoing quest, and it probably will never be perfect because of all the elements of what really valuable people and education for people is all about.
Well, and any time you limit the knowledge base, you hurt yourself as a society. Yeah. And that's basically what these national standards do is they limit the knowledge base, because let's face it, everybody learns from a lot of different things. College is a wonderful way to get an education, but it's not the only way to get an education. And, you know, you have to take that into account. And if you start blocking that off, I think in part, I know up in my area in Lansing with the community college there, when they dropped programs, the big push at that time, about 4 years ago only, was, well, we got to go push the STEM. We got the science, technology, engineering, math, and they were going to take and convert these areas of the campus from these labs for hospitality or sort of auto mechanics into math classrooms. Well, now all of a sudden these same people that were pushing the STEM are saying, you know, we got to do more with vocational education. We got to do more with tradesmen skills, you know. And that's because they tried to lock it up. And in part, I think, is because a lot of the technology companies today, and by the way, the technology job growth does not even make the top 10, but we've had so much emphasis on getting people trained for those jobs. But a lot of the technology companies have adopted a business model that says, rather than us having to train our employees in our way of doing things, let's see if we can get the taxpayers to do that for us. You know, and in a way, it's just another corporate giveaway.
Yeah, yeah. What about, let's go to other Michigan issues that other candidates are talking about. So in terms of education, you probably try to get more education funding generated somehow by our state and directed back to the local school districts, from what you've already said. But and Common Core, especially if it's doesn't make any sense, you'd want to see that modified or changed or rejected for Michigan. But what other funding things here, like people talk about the roads, the highways, the infrastructure. Governor Snyder hasn't been too successful, even though he came up with that $1.2 billion we need for 10 years to even get our roads and our bridges back to maintenance level. And now I just heard a study saying, well, the cost has gone up. It's going to be like $2 billion a year. So is that doable? I guess it's necessary, right?
Well, I'm not sure that it's necessary. I mean, yes, we do need to improve the roads. One of my family cars is sitting in the driveway now with a broken axle because of the pothole.
Okay.
All right. But I think we need to take a look at both short-term and long-term solutions. And I'm not sure that the total pool of money isn't big enough for what we need in Michigan. It's just being misdirected and misspent in a lot of times. For example, with the roads, short-term, there's a couple of things we can do. I would take probably 2% of the gas tax, which is now going into the general fund, and right away dedicate that to the roads just to make a start on some things. I think 2% spread out among every other issue, we can manage to make that up. We can also take every civil engineer you talk to says one of the worst things on problems with our roads is caused by the road salt we use. And salt, until recently, has been cheap in Michigan, and we've used a lot of it. We could actually develop some standards based on valid research of how much salt to use. That would not only save some money, but could cut down on the damage to the roads. One of the other big issues that we can deal with roads is there's 50 states in this country. Michigan is the only one that allows 160,000-pound trucks on their roads. Everybody else cuts it off at 80,000 pounds, and everybody else, on average, is charging twice as much for that 80,000 pounds as we're charging for the 160,000 pounds in their user fees.
I often wonder if that's because they want all the business created by the trucks going from Chicago to Toledo. If they go through Michigan, you know, they don't have to pay the fines or be forbidden from the heavy loads going through the Indiana, Ohio turnpikes.
That certainly, I'm sure, played a role in it back then. But, you know, and the Michigan Department of Transportation says, well, we base it on a per axle rather than per truck, and that's how the 160,000 pounds came in, because our research showed that. And yet, other than a summary of that research, they've never been able to actually produce the research. And 49 other states can't come to that conclusion. That says there's probably a problem. But all these issues are interrelated. You can't improve schools without improving jobs, without improving roads. They're all connected. So one of the bigger, longer-term approaches we need to take is we have to zero-base our tax structure and say, what would a tax structure that was fair and equitable to everybody in the state look like to raise enough money to cover the issues that the people of Michigan say are a priority to them? Mm-hmm. And then build that from scratch. If we keep tweaking, you know, I heard this morning somebody say, well, if we change the sales tax in this way and the property tax in that way, well, that's why we got a tax code now that's just at the state level somewhere over 10,000 pages. You know, at the federal level, I think it's over 300,000 pages. And, you know, we need to stop and say, what are our priorities? What do we think are valid things for the state to be providing? Because there is a role for government. And, you know, we have to decide that as a people. And one of the things that I like about the Green Party, and one of the things I think I bring as a management skill, is the ability to listen to people and talk to them about very divergent views. People that disagree with me have something else to offer, because what happens is you can offer up the start of a solution, and then somebody says, yeah, but what about this problem? And they can add into that, and they can make suggestions and tweak the ideal so you get better solutions. But when you're having a government that won't even talk to somebody with an opposing view, then you can't really get the benefit of that shared knowledge and that different knowledge that's out there.
That sounds really like the good. Right approach, all right. What about just, I think, a couple more questions about issues, and we'll let you sum up. We have about 5 minutes left in this segment. But, well... Of course, it slipped away now. But, yeah, of course, Green Party. What about the environment? What about alternative energy? That obviously, that's what people think of first when they think of Green Party, but that's a part of the picture. What does the state need to do in that regard?
Well, I think we need to take a look at all the alternative energy sources, and we've begun to do that to some degree. But again, it becomes a short-term and a long-term problem and issue. And so in the short term, we need to do the traditional fossil fuel type energy that we are using better. And there are ways to do that, you know, while continuing to research and take a look at the alternatives. If you drive up through Ithaca area in the middle part of the state, they've begun operations with a big windmill farm. I have to admit, both as an environmentalist, I like the fact that we're looking at alternative energy, but I see how massive these are and spreading over miles there. I mean, it's an amazing human footprint, and that scares me a little bit, you know, to work with that. But again, it's a way to start and move in those directions.
By the way, in case you ever get this in a debate, people say the windmills kill birds. Actually, more birds are killed, far greater numbers, by the large broadcast towers of radio and TV stations. We're talking about the high power wattage ones. The birds just fly close, and if the wind blows them that way too, they sort of burn up from the inside out. It's like a microwave problem. Wow. And every year, the largest wattage operations of radio and TV towers, they have to have small tractors that go through and pick up all the dead bird bodies and scoop them out. And there was even an environmental study done a couple years ago. I never heard the outcome, where the state of Michigan actually said, well, how many birds are killed? How many tons do you scoop up every year? So, you know, watch out, radio and TV broadcasters. You know, you're killing birds too, and I don't think there's that many that the wind farms would go after. Actually, solar is becoming a big idea. You say, well, Michigan, today it's a little cloudy outside, but... the solar technology is changing so that solar is a good option in Michigan, too. Some combination of maybe wind power near the lakes, especially. I'm not sure about Ithaca, but certainly I've heard near the lakes the wind is significant. And then solar
is progressing. Yeah. And MSU, near my home, the researchers there have actually created solar panels now that are transparent. And so that they're not producing as much power yet, but they're working on that. But so these could actually replace the glass in windows in buildings and still function as a solar panel. So we're making steps in the right direction that way.
There was a plant in Troy a couple of years ago, supposedly was making solar panels that actually looked like, and were in effect, looked like roofing materials. So you just put a new roof on, but in fact, they're all interconnected and they're getting energy from the sun too, but they don't look like panels per se. So I don't know what happened with that, whether they went out of business or something. But so is it government's place, do you think, to put some investment money into those startups?
Well, I think there's government place to put some money into research. I think that probably in most cases, the startups can find their own venture capital and work with that.
Good point. There's never enough research. And in fact, even here I go, opinions again, but even in medical research, most of the big big pharma, as they're called, they don't want to research anything that would be a cure. That's not their first choice, certainly, right, or their second or third. They want something that you'll have to take to eliminate the symptoms forever, because that's where the money is going to be.
Sure.
That once you get a cure, well, they don't need you anymore. There goes your profits long term. And that's too bad. That's a terrible indictment, but it's certainly true. There's almost no individual big pharma companies that are researching an actual cure for cancer or anything else, just something to keep things from getting worse.
Corralled.
Or maybe removing the symptoms, even though you're still sick, let's say. That's all wrong, too. So I totally agree with you on that research, it looks like government has to try to fund the really good research in science, because the big companies don't seem to want to go in the appropriate directions. Often. Let me qualify it just a little bit.
Sure. Well, and that's true. And one of the things that I think would be important, it ties in, is we have the Michigan Economic Development Corporation, which is horribly inefficient, poorly managed, and just really crony capitalism at its worst. And amazingly, even the Mackinac Center agrees with me on that and says it should be gotten rid of. So if a progressive like myself and a conservative group like the Mackinac Center can actually find some common ground, if they actually talk to each other, there's hope.
Yeah. Ford Motor Company, locally, the big Ford Motor headquarters here, they're putting in sort of roofing over 300 spots in their car lots for their employees. And those roofs are all going to produce electricity, and of course provide some of the spots will be for electric cars, if you want to drive your electric car, Ford electric car, to Ford to work. But get this roofing that goes over 300 car spots, parking spots, is actually enough to power, they said, something like 150 homes.
Right.
All the electrical needs for 150 homes every year.
Yeah.
So, good for Ford for doing that, but I'm saying, gee, maybe the city ought to figure out what that technology is and see if we can do that. Because that would mean they'd all be off the grid, 150 houses. Of course, we've got about 22,000 homes in Dearborn, but it might take a while to build all that. But they haven't said how much that's costing them. That's got to be a chunk of change. But Ford hopes to be, I think, just 10% energy efficient in about 10 years. Mm-hmm. That's not much of a goal, but still, I think they see that's going to be a cost-benefit ratio for them in the long term.
Well, and I think that's true, and I think you touched on another problem that we have that goes across all areas of the society, and that we have politicians who have said, well, okay, that's only, 150 homes out of the 2,200 or whatever. It's, too small. It's not worth doing. Well, the fact is, the more small problems you solve, the more you take off, the easier the bigger ones become. Cool. And you have to stop saying, we can't do anything perfect, then we don't do it at all.
Well, it's really been wonderful to have you here, Paul Homeniak, who is the Green Party candidate for governor of Michigan, and his last name, in fact, your website is Paul Homeniak, Homeniuk .com.
.org.
Okay. Non-commercial. Let's keep it non-commercial. Yeah. And what would you say to people considering voting for you, the people who want to vote for you? I know you probably got to say something about why choose a third party. Why would they want to vote for someone other than Democrat or Republican? It's a pretty close race. That seems very tempting and a difficulty for people who want to vote their conscience in terms of either Libertarian or Green parties. I don't want so-and-so to win, or I got to. So make a case there, but also talk about what you believe in. And I personally hope that people vote for the candidate that they most want to have in charge of their government.
Well, I think that's important, too. And I ask people to think about, when was the last time you were able to vote for someone instead of against the other guy? And especially in the governor's office, no matter who wins the legislature, whether the Republicans stay in control or the Democrats, having a third party in the governor's office who can veto and stop the nonsense bills they put through is going to be a big change. And it can force the legislature to focus in on the issues that matter to all the people of Michigan. Either they're going to have to work together to override me, which then everybody wins if they're working together, or we can stop at least some of the nonsense and work toward improving the entire management of the state. So that's one good reason to vote there. People worry about taking votes away, say, well, you know, I'd like to see the Democrats and the Republicans and the third party stealing votes. And the research actually shows that third parties and a state that's fairly evenly split do not draw from the party that's closest to them. They draw actually from the party that's furthest from them. Because all those independents that were having to settle and say, well, I want to vote for somebody, so I better vote for this guy, now have a third place to turn to and somebody that may be closer to them. And so, you know, don't worry about taking away from votes. Vote for what you believe is going to be best for your friends and neighbors and yourself here in the state of Michigan. That's what a free society is all about. We'll deal with whatever comes up and the results. And so I think that's a real important thing. Most importantly, get out there and vote. Get out there and tell your neighbors, remind your neighbors to vote. Government is run by those who show up. And, you know, the government we have is the government we chose. And if we want to make them choose something different, you have to actually take some action. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that summation. Paul Homeniak, who is the candidate for governor of Michigan from the Green Party. And I think it's, is it greenpartymi.org? Is that the Green Party website here?
It's michgreenparty.org.
Okay. And so you can either go there or Paul Homeniak, which is HOMENIUK.org. You can get information about his candidacy and where he's appearing. Just real briefly, because I have it in front of me, tonight you'll be at the Tri-County Political Information Awareness Forum for the three-man county, including Wayne, that we're in. And that's going to be at the First Baptist World Changers International Ministries. Apparently, they've done this kind of forum before, and good for them. That's on 8 Mile Road, starts at 7 p.m. tonight, if people want to catch you there. And I thought this was interesting, you were asked to speak also at the Islamic Association of Greater Detroit. Hadn't heard of them before, but there they are. And this is at a mosque in Rochester Hills, where you're going to be on October 11th, a week from tomorrow. How did that invitation happen, if I may ask? Obviously, Dearborn is known as the center of Islamic communities in the United States, and a lot of great citizens and business people, and you know, contributions to our community from the Islamic community. Many mosques here too.
Well, the letter came from the organization unsolicited. They do say in their letter that particular mosque in Rochester is the oldest mosque in Michigan.
Oh, okay.
And so they've got a long history there, and so they're trying to get everybody out and let their members know that.
I can't commend enough any organization that is open to all the views and all the possibilities, especially within the political system, because that's only going to result in the best for all of us if we can get the information out about what our full range of choices are. So thank you very much for being on the show today. Of course, this segment will be the podcast as soon as this broadcast is done, and people can access it from WHFR.FM anytime after today if you want to tell your friends or neighbors about it, folks, because we're interviewing the challengers, not the candidates. We're interviewing the people that should be heard from if you want to make a full and fair choice. So, John?
Well, and don't forget, Michigan citizens, October 6th, Monday, is the deadline for registering to vote in the November 4th election.
Right. If you're not registered to vote, you don't have a chance even at the last minute to go vote. Oh, now I heard about this candidate. Oh, darn, I'm not registered. So even if you think you don't want to vote, And I don't think that's the right approach because you don't trust the candidates. Maybe you need to find out about all the candidates and at least put your option in there. So Monday is the deadline. Go to your neighborhood city clerk's office with the various ID and get registered and tell other people to do that too. I'm going to we're going to take a break here on the new WHFR Journal. I'm going to play a 2.5 minute commentary from Jack Lessenberry. And he's talking about the developing psychosis that surrounds the governor race for governor between Schneider and Schauer. I'm even messing up their names now and calling them each other the other's name.
They're interchangeable.
Maybe that sort of follows here the problem with only two candidates and the craziness, especially of their campaign ads that I've been bemoaning, because there's errors and exaggerations on both sides, according to people that do the research. So anyway, here's Lessenberry's commentary, and we'll be back with our final thoughts on the new WHFR Journal today. And again, thanks so much, Paul Homeniak, for being our guest.
Thank you for letting me be here.
If you're following the campaign for governor, you really aren't normal. Yes, you heard me correctly. The media, me included, has been writing more and more about the campaign, not just for governor, but for the Senate and various other races. Today, the Detroit Free Press's headline trumpets, "With vote just weeks away, Schneider builds lead." That's written as if it were describing something tangible and real, like new mountain discovered in Brazil. In fact, that story is based on a poll the newspaper and the TV station paid for. The data is based on a mere 600 people. 45% favored Rick Schneider, 39% favored Mark Schauer. That's pretty close to the margin of error. Nevertheless, Bernie Porn, the man whose firm did the polling, said authoritatively, "Schneider went up with his advertising campaign, and it's made a significant difference in this race." But, as if conscious that nobody likes a play whose ending is revealed in the first act, Porn added, "Even with Schneider's lead, it's certainly not too late for Schauer to turn things around." In other words, it's the Belmont Stakes and the horses are just coming into the backstretch. However, I have news for us political junkies. Far more people are like the server at the cheap restaurant where I had lunch yesterday. When I asked him about the governor's race, he said, "Is that this year?" He also thought he was a registered voter, but wasn't quite sure. Well, I don't need Bernie Porn to tell me how that guy is going to vote. He's not. In fact, most registered voters aren't going to vote. I know that because fewer than half ever do in any election other than for president. To badly parody Casablanca, many people feel the fortunes of two rival 50-something guys from Battle Creek don't amount to a hill of beans in this crazy world. They don't think anything Schauer or Schneider can or will do will make much difference in their lives. That might not be so bad if we all agreed that all was well in this very best of all possible worlds, except it's not. And increasingly, we don't really believe that our leaders can do much to fix things. That wasn't true once upon a time. We thought the right set of leaders and the right set of laws could make the world a better place. We've been disillusioned a lot since then by politicians on the right and the left. The news media is also somewhat to blame. Many reporters think they're covering the campaign. They aren't. They're covering the polls and the television commercials, $20 million worth of which have aired so far. Most are about as informative as insults in a playground fight. In any event, we have real and lingering problems in this state. I follow this stuff daily, and I don't have a clue if either of these men can, say, get the roads fixed or how they'd get the money. Neither does anyone else, which is why so many have quietly concluded none of this is very relevant to them, which, if you believe in democracy, just may be the scariest infomercial of all.
You're listening to the new WHFR Journal. Just helping Paul Homeniak out through our offices and some final words. It's always great to have a state candidate for office be here and to provide you information you can't get at any other station. You know, today is National College Radio Day. You're already listening to college radio. We do this all the time here, but you probably listen because